Lux Occult is part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network.
Hecate of the Path, I invoke thee, lovely lady of the Triple Crossroads, Celestial, Chthonian, and Marine One, Lady of the Saffron Road, Sepulchral One, celebrating the Bakshik mysteries among the souls of the dead, Daughter of Perses, Lover of Solitude, rejoicing in gear, Nocturnal One, Lady of the Dogs, Invincible Queen, She of the Cry of the Beast, Ungirt One, having an irresistible form, Bull Herder, Keeper of the Keys of all the Universe, Mistress, Guide, Bride, Nurturer of Youths, Mountain Wanderer, I pray thee, Maiden, be present at our hallowed rite of initiation, always bestowing thy graciousness upon the Bukolos.
That was an Orphic hymn to Hecate, translated by Adam Forrest. Hello and welcome to Lux Occult. This is the podcast where we gleefully taunt the mundane, butcher the Latin and most other languages, and we also discuss a variety of occult topics, exploring the intersections of science, art, magic, and philosophy. It's occultism for everyone. I'm your host, Lux Estrada, and if you are hearing the sound of my voice, that means that this show, and magic for that matter, are for you, if you want them. There are a lot of different ways to be more free, and using magic or making space for a spiritual practice in your life can be one of them. As always, I don't speak for anybody but myself. Others can, will, and should disagree sometimes. How would we ever learn anything if we all agreed all the time after all? And like anybody who tries to be reasonable should be willing to do, I am willing to revise my opinions based on new evidence. All right. So I am super stoked to present the conversation that I had with my guest today, Stevie. Stevie was kind enough to come and hang out and chat with me about their practice of theurgy, some thoughts on miracles in the modern world, as well as the concept of spoon theory and how some of their practice has involved cultivating astral or imaginal spoons, and how this is tied in with Stevie's work with the Green Mushroom Project as well. I really appreciate Stevie's attitude of like respectful consideration and authentic openness. It was something that I was really impressed with the first time we spoke, and it made me want to talk more with them. Okay, so before we get into it here, I'd like to say thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with me here on the show. I'm super lucky to have such amazing listeners, collaborators, etc. Y'all are the fucking best. I always welcome people's thoughts, questions, comments, suggestions, or arcane revelations. You can reach me at luxoccultpod@gmail.com. Or you can hit me up on Instagram at LuxCallPod. I've been using social media a lot less, and that is good for me, but it does not mean that I do not want to hear from you all. If you like the show and you're into what I'm doing, you can support it on Patreon. If you do so, you can take a bibliomancy break with me, and there are no tiers or levels or whatever, so give as you will. And thank you so fucking much to everybody who's already doing that. Your support really fucking means a lot, and it makes the show possible. If you're also into the show and you don't have the money or that's not your thing or whatever, you can tell a friend, a bitter rival, you can rate it or review it on most of the podcatching apps, which would also be super helpful. So thank you so much. I'd like to give a shout out to Angela Guyton and Ramsey Giannini. These are the authors of the Nothing Rhymes with Rats comic. I really fucking love this shit. It's very, very funny. If you're into like existentialism or stuff like that, you might really enjoy this. The premise is that there are these two rats that are lab rats, and they are awaiting what is probably going to be a pretty terrible death. And, you know, it's the sort of question is like, well, how much freedom can we find within our own cages? So it's good stuff. Highly recommend it. And I'll put a link to their Instagram, which is at nrwr_comic. I think one of my favorite parts of this is there's a scene where like one of the rats has this sort of like clockwork orangey like gizmo on him that's holding the rat's eyes open and asking the other one, hey, want to have a staring contest? And the other one's like, no, no fair. It's like, oh, we can do a thumb war instead. I don't know. It's very fun. It's good shit. Okay, so setting the table for today's conversation, here are a few definitions and stuff. First off, spoon theory. So this is a metaphor that is used to describe the amount of mental or physical energy a person has available for daily activities and tasks. It was developed by Christine Misurandio, apologies Christine, in 2003 as a way to express how it felt to have lupus. She used spoons to provide a visual representation of units of energy that a person might have and how chronic illness forces her to plan out her days and actions in advance, so as not to run out of energy, or spoons, before the end of the day. It has since been applied to other phenomena, such as disabilities, mental health issues, marginalization, and other factors that might place an extra, often unseen, burden on some individuals. Okay, so thank you, Wikipedia. We do also talk about, like, miracles and stuff in this one, so switching gears slightly, let's figure out the definition of that word, if we can. So yes, unsurprisingly, there's all kinds of baggage surrounding this term. To keep it simple, I'm going to go with Oxford here. Okay, so noun, miracle, or miracles, plural. A surprising and welcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws, and is therefore considered to be the work of a divine agency. So the example here is the miracle of rising from the grave. Second definition, a highly improbable or extraordinary event, development or accomplishment that brings very welcome consequences. Example, it was a miracle that more people hadn't been killed or injured. Third definition, an amazing product or achievement, or an outstanding example of something. Example, a machine which was a miracle of design. So we see that in all three of these cases, the word miracle seems to at least partly imply an intersection of like the divine or numinous or holy in our everyday experience of the world. So the ability to sort of tap into this idea of like, you know, doing miracles, making big magic perhaps, is contextualized in this conversation as thaumaturgy. So digging into the definition of what that is, thaumaturgy is the purported capability of a magician to work magic or other paranormal events, or a saint to perform miracles. It is sometimes translated into English as wonder-working. A practitioner of thaumaturgy is a thaumaturge or thaumaturgist, thaumaturgus, or miracle worker. A saint who is a person who is recognized as having an exceptional degree of holiness or likeness to closeness to God may be claimed to have performed miracles, which are events not explicable by natural or scientific laws. The word thaumaturgy derives from the Greek, thauma, meaning miracle or marvel, and ergon, meaning work. Okay, cool. Thanks, Wikipedia. So we see this idea like coming up in various different spiritual traditions in history, including magical ones and religious ones. It comes up in Indian religions and in Islam, as well as Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity. So in Greek writings, the term thaumaturge referred to several Christian saints. A saint was thought to be somebody who God works miracles through, not just occasionally, but like as a matter of course. Thank you so much to Wikipedia for that. The term thaumaturgy does come up a lot in places in pop culture. Stevie mentions that they first came across it playing the game Vampire the Masquerade. There is a spell in Dungeons and Dragons called thaumaturgy, as well as a mod series in Minecraft called Thaucraft. There's a lot of fun intersection between games and magic. There is a whole episode of this show about that where I discuss hyper sigils and Dungeons and Dragons and tabletop role-playing games with Rider Dreadnought from the Faithblind Council podcast. And yes, that is episode 31. So check that out if it sounds interesting to you. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of my own D&D work during the break. I'm not going to get too far into it because I sat down to try to like pin it all down and explain it, and it became way too unwieldy to try to fit into a break in a podcast episode. But I'm going to go over a couple of different things there. I do want to give a shout out to Flood from the XV Planis podcast. You can also hear a conversation with my guest today, Stevie, on Flood's show. And I would definitely recommend checking that out. Stevie's got a lot of really interesting takes about science and philosophy and all kinds of other things that I was telling them the other night. Like, it's probably good that I didn't hear that conversation before we spoke, because I would have kept you a lot longer and you never would have been able to leave. But we had a great conversation for this one and get into some really fun and interesting stuff. During the last portion of the interview, Stevie and I discussed their upcoming foot fetish zine. Very exciting. I'm going to be back to set the table for that, as well as to talk about the experiment I've been conducting, which is related to the new sound and sex magic project I'm working on. It's sort of a part two of the Gratis Animus project that I released last year. Very excited about it. And as I said before, I'll be back to talk a little bit about some of my own deity work as well. But for now, let's get into that interview. Here is my chat with Stevie. All right, fuck yeah. Well, Stevie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me this evening.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Fuck yeah, welcome. Okay, yeah. So as is the custom, could you please introduce yourself and let us know like what you're about and what you're up to and everything?
My name is Stevie. I guess I identify as an occultist and an aspiring thaumaturge. I like this idea of a wonder worker, and I'm not really sure where I sort of fall on like the definition of a miracle, but it seems to me that that kind of thing, like people being awed, could, I don't know, it couldn't hurt at least, but it could like it would be bold to say like that's what the world needs, but like I'd like to be able to somehow bring that to at least the people that I encounter. And I don't know how to do that. I don't know what that entails. That's why I say aspiring. I'm still sort of like soaking up ideas and kind of at the very like infancy of that. It just occurred to me one day. I remembered the word thaumaturge, and I think it's from playing Vampire the Masquerade in high school, because I think thaumaturgy is like a like something one of the vampire clans can have.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But I don't remember which or what it entailed in that context. But yeah, it just sort of popped in my head one day, and then I looked it up and I'm like, oh yeah, that's super cool. What would it be like to be a thaumaturge today? I guess am sort of eclectic, like an eclectic occultist. It's like a little of this, a little of that. I never really identified as a chaos magician, but then as I started to come out of like a really, really long, like sort of cynical, very cynical atheist part of my life, like span of time, I started listening to some chaos magician like podcasts, and it like all of the things that I've soaked up from those podcasts have sort of, you know, made their way into my practice. Yeah, I don't know. that's such a, it's like a broad thing. Like what am I about? And I'm gonna sort of stop there. And like, if there are any, I can't think of anything that I definitely need to like say as far as like how I identify or yeah. Because I feel myself rambling quite a bit.
Rambling is what podcasts are all about.
Yeah,
you're doing good.
That's true.
All right. Well, so one of the reasons I wanted to ask you on to talk with me, well, actually, there's a few different reasons, but like one of the first times that I thought, like, I really want to talk to this person was when I saw some work that you had done with the Green Mushroom Project involving like this idea of spoons.
Yes.
And I thought that was so fucking, I really connected with it just on a lot of different like levels, just even in the sort of like adjacent food adjacent thing that which is like a whole other thing for me. But sure. Like, yeah, just it's super interesting.
Yeah. So I think that this, I've been thinking about this today, trying to remember like, where did this idea come from? Like what inspired it? And it's, I think it occurred to me somewhere in like 2019. So it's been quite a while and I've sort of lost the train of thought. Unfortunately, it's not in any of my journals, like the sort of eureka, like let's use this in ritual. But it's based on the mental health concept of a spoon, which for people that have like mental illness or like, I don't know if you've ever heard anyone say like, I didn't have enough spoons today. And it's like a spoon is a measure of your ability to sort of not just like physically do things, you know, based on whether you're fatigued or not, but also like your ability to sort of deal with people, be social or, you know, talk to like a doctor over the phone. It's like a measure of wherewithal is a good word maybe. And I'd been aware of that before, but then it occurred to me somewhere along the line to sort of like, I could sort of adapt that idea into a magical practice. And, I think the first like iteration of that was sort of like a spoons giving visualization. And it was like, I just imagined myself physically giving spoons to people. Like I went through the whole, like I get up out of bed, I, you know, walk down my stairs, I go into the kitchen, I pull out the drawer, and as like vivid as I could make it. And then it would get like a little weird, like, space-time weird, where it's like, and then I sort of, you know, turn 180 and there are people there waiting for their spoons or you know, but that was limited to like people that, I mean, basically that's akin to like praying for people, so that's like, that's limited to who wants to be prayed for, and that's like a limited number of people. At somewhere along the line it occurred to me to sort of morph it into like very bizarre like video game imagery, because I can remember like being a kid and like video games were just like wonderful. They were, that was like, so I don't know, it was like, it was joyous to play a video game, and especially if you like discovered like a secret room or like a secret level or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. Yeah, and oftentimes it's like, it would just be like full of coins, or I don't know if you ever played like Donkey Kong Country. It's like you would somehow get into it. Yeah, like it's sometimes, yeah. Like there's like a part where you're on like the, what is it? Like a swordfish, and
yes,
you go into like a secret place, and then the coins all just, I think, look like swordfish.
Yeah. Do you remember the mine level? I think that was my favorite. Those like mine levels where you were riding in the cart. And, yeah, super fun.
I do, and I would fall all the time. I've always had to have my brother like take the controller for levels like that. Yeah, there's like some, like it was, you had like confidence, you know, after like finding like a room like that. Or like I played a lot of Legend of Zelda Link to the Past and discover like a hidden like heart piece and or a bunch of rupees or whatever. And that sort of versatility, like what is a coin, quote unquote, in a video game? It could be rupees or coins or rings if you're playing Sonic, or shaped like, you know, the animals that you're riding on in Donkey Kong Country. And I thought spoons can do this. There's no reason why I couldn't think of spoons in this way. And so then I just started visualizing that spoons would just be in the air, free for the taking. And then that sort of like expanded it so that I wasn't worrying about whether I was praying for people anymore that didn't want to be or that I would be praying for people that don't want it. Now it's just expanded out to like the resources are just sort of there. And by dint of me like walking around in the world, this happens, or that, or so my sort of imaginal or visualization technique would go. And that's still how I think of it. It's just a matter of sort of sitting and like getting into sort of a, I guess it depends on what you want to call it, like a meditative state, I would say. And then going through like a visualization like that, whether it's like me just imagining the actual, like after I've parked my car to go to my job, then like from getting out of my car to walking to my office, just everything's the same except for there are these spoons in the air everywhere I walk.
Fuck yeah, dude. I love that. That's awesome. I think like, I mean, it's a really cool idea, and it's, I like, you know, the idea that like things that, you know, connect us with our past or whatever can be like really magically powerful. So the sort of like tie in with video games makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I've been influenced a lot. Whitley Strieber, I'm really into alien abduction books. I always have been. And somewhere along the lines, I mean, Whitley Strieber has said a lot of weird things. His work is, there's a lot of breadth to his, all the things that he's written. And I can't remember where he says this, maybe a few places. He talks about joy being important. And he also talks about his childhood a lot and like how fascinated he was with just everything, sort of with nature or with metaphysics, if you want to sort of, you know, go sort of deeper. Although, I don't know, maybe there's no deeper than nature. It just depends on how sort of broad you make nature. and that definitely sort of, when I read that like a couple years ago, I think that's when I thought I can change like my spoon visualization up a little bit. Just sort of like got me thinking about it, inner child type feelings.
Yeah, totally. I think that stuff is really important, and I don't think it's something that we like talk about enough as occultists, actually. Like, I know, I think it's uncomfortable and embarrassing to do so a lot of times. I know it can be for me. So yeah.
And I mean, that's why I try to say up front that I am into the idea of thaumaturgy or wonder working, because it's like an unabashed sort of headspace, and it is a little bit embarrassing because it's like so focused on joy and wonder, and those just aren't often, and it's not just occultism, but even just in the wider, like in the public sphere, just I don't know that it's just, you know, our nature. I think it's probably like learned, and we're inured to being sort of negative, or at least dark or guarded. And I definitely don't want to like go overboard and be like a sort of like a toxically positive person, like a, sure. Like too like overbearing. But I do sort of try to push back a reasonable amount against that. Sort of always wanting to be dark or guarded or that it's like we're just not allowed to sort of express that we're full of joy or wonder. That's like broad strokes. Obviously, there's a lot of nuance to the reality of things. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. I think that I've felt that, like, you know, that vibe, this sort of like, I think it is probably easier just from a standpoint of like, you know, not being vulnerable or whatever, to like, you know, go around and be like, oh, you know, I'm this or I'm that, and sort of like, you know, hide behind whatever facade you have chosen. But sure. To like be actually honest about your experience and stuff like that is, you know, honesty is a position of vulnerability, but it's also like a position of power too. So like, I don't know, I think it's dope for sure. I also wanted to say that, like, you know, inherent in like the story that you just told me, like, I really appreciate the kind of careful consideration that you've given to like some of what I kind of think of as like the deeper issues of like consent when it comes to magic and stuff. Mm. Like, you know, were really cognizant of like, well, maybe these people don't want to be prayed for or interact energetically or however you want to think about it with me in this way. And sort of like having that really broad attitude of respect is something that I think is really, I applaud you for it. I think it's really inspirational.
Sure. I mean, I think also just from, I think there's also a practical element to that too, because we all know that just, well, maybe we don't all know. If you're online and you start arguing with people, it's not generally how they change their mind. And I think it's sort of the same with like, if someone doesn't recognize necessarily that they need something, if you try to give it to them, it's an insult, it's condescending. If they discovered on their own, though, I mean, again, just going back to the video games, I was much more excited to find a room full of coins that I could just go and collect rather than, I don't know, one of the NPCs giving me like an item.
Sure.
That was cool, too. But there was something, there's like a different feel to just discovering something and then deciding that I want all of those things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and the consent definitely is important to me, though, too. Yes.
Oh, yeah. So, like, can I ask you a little bit more about your idea, like, of thaumaturgy? Is there a specific deity that you work with or, like, pantheon or anything like that? Or
no. So far, no. Like I said, it's, like, the very infancy of an idea. I really don't have much other than, like, I think it would be really... And I don't expect to, like, somehow come across some, like, secret working that gives me the ability to like shoot, you know, sparks of magic out of my hands or anything. Like I'm not, I don't have like these, that kind of delusional idea about it. And so, but I don't know. I think that like I've been around people where it just seems like more things are possible around like this person. And I just kind of want to cultivate that. And so far, I have like a couple books that I've ordered on the topic of miracles from a couple different, like I have, and I've not really dug into them yet, but I have one that's like, I have A Course in Miracles. I'm just sort of curious, you know, like what is a miracle according to this person, according to their faith, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I have another that's like sort of more off the wall. It's by I think it's in a different room right now. Nope, there it is. It's called Creating Miracles in the Modern World by the Silver Elves. The way of the Elfin Thaumaturge. And again,
okay.
It's not necessarily the direction that I want to go in to work with elves, and I'm not sure how I feel about authors of a book identifying as elves themselves, but it just seemed interesting to just get this perspective.
I have so many questions.
Yeah. So I'm just sort of still in that research and collecting information, the very, very beginnings of that right now.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, that's cool, man. I think that a lot of people say this, and this has been my experience too, of like sometimes you don't have to like look too hard for a deity to work with, because one will just like show up and be like, hey, what's up? I feel your vibe, you know, you want to like hang out with me or whatever.
Like, yeah,
so yeah.
Sometimes I think that I want to, so I have a couple versions of the Orphic hymns, and sometimes I think that's sort of my path, and I want to work with the Greek or Roman or just Greco-Roman pantheon. And then sometimes something about it just doesn't, I just sort of go back and forth. So sometimes I use Orphic hymns when I'm doing ritual, and there are a lot of them. So you have a lot of deities or spirits to choose from. Like I actually did the Orphic hymn to the Graces, the Charities, before the podcast, just asking something simple like grace me with your presence, so that this can just be a nice, warm, comfortable chat. But as far as like how I might choose one for wonder working, I don't know that there's like a one-to-one sort of deity in that pantheon. So yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think my mind immediately sort of goes to like a Hermes, right? Like, but this, I don't know, like, it, like if this is, this can be sort of like a trickstery.
Yeah, exactly.
This can be sort of like a smoke and mirror thing, which might not be the spectacle that you're thinking
of.
Right,
yeah.
Like,
Yeah, I mean, I'm influenced by, you know, reading as a kid or ever since I was a kid about just like any kind of paranormal or occult thing that I could get my hands on. And so I have more in mind as a template, but not necessarily like as an end goal for like where I could ever get to. Again, I don't have delusions of grandeur, but like things like the, what is that called? There was like something that happened at Fatima where like hundreds of people saw like the sun like spin around and do all kinds of crazy shit. And again, I don't think that I can get there, but I at least want to sort of have those things in mind as I sort of get into the mental space of what would it mean or what do I sort of have in mind? Just maybe like a smidgen of that, like a small version of that. And again, I don't know what that would be. And I almost don't want to dictate like what it would be. I know that's like really vague and I apologize because again, like I just don't have it sort of all, I don't have anything formulated yet.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Like to me, like these processes aren't typically like top down anyway. So like the things are discovered. So like, if you had a huge plan that you were going to carry out, I mean, like maybe it would work, but you'd probably have to change it a bunch along the way anyway.
Yeah,
I don't know. Mentioned too that I do owe you a bibliomancy reading. Do you want to do that on the air here or do you want to do that later?
Oh, wow. Let's, I'll get my dice and we can do that.
Okay. Hey, what is up? It's me, Alexa from the future. I hope you are enjoying the conversation. I know I had a great time talking with Stevie. We're going to be getting to that bibliomancy break in just a second here, but I wanted to duck in and tell you about a show that I'm really excited about. It's a new show that my friend is making. It's called The Woodland Show. It's a sort of like storytelling format, and it's very fun and relaxing, and I highly fucking recommend it. There'll be links to that in the show notes. I also want to give a shout out to Lonnie Scott from the Weird Web Radio Show and from althypnosis.com. I have been enjoying studying hypnosis with him, and it's very, very interesting and has a lot of intersections with a lot of stuff that we see in a magical practice. So very cool stuff there. And of course, you can hear my conversation with Lonnie here on this show, episode 32, Chaos, Heathenry, and Hypnosis with Lonnie Scott. And you can hear my conversation with him on his excellent show, Weird Web Radio. So we've been talking about thaumaturgy and miracle working and the like, and I wanted to bring in a sort of adjacent concept, which is theurgy. This is literally translates to divine work. So I'm going to read you a nice little summation that I found on practicaltheurgy.com. So theurgy is best understood as collaborative effort between human beings and the gods. The word was first used by the Chaldean oracles in the 2nd century CE and became fully elaborated in the ritual philosophy of the Neoplatonist Iambicus, who died around 325 CE. Unlike the earlier system of Plotinus, which stressed the importance of contemplation to attain mystical union with the One, theurgic Neoplatonism also emphasizes ritual. Various ritual techniques serve to purify the vessel of the theurgist and enable their ascent to the divine source. Theurgic rituals utilize various divine symbola and synthemata, which are symbols and tokens and materials like stones and plants and incenses, etc. Also utilized are divine names, numerical constructs, and other ritual structures. A gradual process of ritual purification and ascent brings about the realization of divinity within the individual, what Iambicus calls the one of the soul. One way that this can be understood is a shift in an individual's perceptive from the mortal to the divine. Therefore, the supposed like body-soul dualism of Plato's Phaedro and Phaedrus dialogues can be reconciled with the overall monistic system of the Timaeus, as well as of like Neoplatonism in general. Matter is, quote, co-natural with the soul, soul with the intellect, and intellect with the one. Theurgic ritual is the complementary moment of reversion to the demiurgic process, understood to be a continuous cyclical movement. By coming to understand the hidden structures of the universe, the theurgist participates in its ongoing creation. All right, fuck yeah. So the Big Bang that just keeps on banging. I think that a lot of this stuff definitely does track for me in terms of how I have been thinking about some of the things that I do in my own deity work. One thing that I think a lot about is this idea of, I guess it's sort of like adjacent to like the alchemical idea of like solvit coagula, right? Like this idea of being burned like from within with like this, you know, this divine passion and like, you know, just being like melted down and remade. The passage that I read to you mentions this as being thought of as sort of like a process of purification. And I think that for me, it's, I conceptualize it a little bit different. I don't really think about pure, impure. I don't know. Those words don't have as much meaning to me, I guess. But I think for me, it's really more about like sort of burning away that which is not like authentic, or sort of like the idea of burning this kind of path to liberation for oneself, perhaps. But yes, it's a very intuitive process that's a very sort of like one-on-one intimate relationship between me and the deities, deity, however you want to look at it, with which I work. So yeah, I think that for me, a big part of exploring this kind of work has been learning to listen. And I think this is true for like, gosh, any style of practicing, you know, the idea of like tuning into those like inner whisperings, those inner susurrations perhaps, and you know, kind of getting a sort of direct line on things. There's all kinds of ways to experiment with this, and one of the ways you can do that is through divinatory processes like scrying or any of them. I did some bibliomancy recently related to the sound magic project that I'm working on. I wanted to get a little idea of what I should think about going into this ritual that I was about to run. And I want to share with you the passage that I got because I think it really does relate to what I'm talking about here. So this is from the book Hecate Sotira by Sarah Isles Johnston. Okay, and this is the passage that I landed on when I did my bibliomancy. These are the epiphanies of Hecate and of the lesser celestial entities, angels, inges, and daemons who accompany her. The theurgist must ignore most of this confusion, however, and listen only to the voice of Hecate, which emerges from the... Okay, and so in this book, there's like a typo or something, or like a line missing, because the sentence just ends with the, and then it sort of like goes on to the next paragraph. And this is not like quoting fragment or anything like of text, like this was the author's notes. So I just thought it was really interesting. It's like, okay, well, you have to listen to the voice of Hecate, which emerges from the, you know, blank. And I think that's actually fucking perfect. It emerges from... Yes. And in keeping with the idea of like miracle working and this sort of like idea of the intersection between the divine and the mundane, perhaps, it's noted in here that in the Chaldean tradition, like Hecate's most important functions were mediating and dividing the two portions of the universe, called here the sensible and the intelligible worlds. I think that that's interesting too. This idea of sensible and intelligible remind me of the two, you know, hemispheres of the brain as well, and the sort of like mediation that takes place there. So the book that I just read for you from was a gift, and if the person who gave it to me is listening, I just want to say thank you so much. I really like it, and I appreciate it. Well, speaking of books and bibliomancy and the like, let's get back to that conversation with Stevie. We're going to be rolling into the bibliomancy break here.
Relevant to what we're talking about, and so it is a four-sided die and an eight-sided.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so I've got a one and an eight, and I'll just ask this question: where might I look next in trying to find out more about wonderworking and thaumaturgy?
So you rolled a 1 and an 8?
Correct.
All right, cool. It's going to be from Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse.
Oh, great.
Have it right here. Okay. Oh, Eris. Where should Stevie look next as they press forward with the thaumaturgical quest? Unimportant. He only knew that his previous life... At the first moment of his return to consciousness, his previous life seemed to him like a remote incantation, like an earlier birth of his present self, was finished, that it was so full of nausea and wretchedness that he had wanted to destroy it, but that he had come to himself by a river, under a coconut tree, with the holy word Om on his lips. Thank you, Eris.
Yeah, thank you, Eris. Yeah, I like that. That is, it's interesting because, like, what I think of right away is like a sort of like rebirth, almost being like birth through fire or a rebirth, and it's interesting because, I mean, one of the reasons I think that people might need wonder is because, like, I went through like this phase and I sort of like hinted at it with some cynicism, and that was like due to some trauma and some just sort of getting stuck in a groove after that trauma happened. And then something happened that just sort of broke me open. And that's when I started, like, I went back and thought, oh yeah, when I was a kid, I was so into magic and the occult, and then I started thinking about it again, and, you know, and it was like being reborn almost, and it was definitely like leaving a bunch of things in the past, and I didn't see the sun spinning around in the sky necessarily, but it did feel like like the thing that had happened that sort of broke me open, and then everything that happened afterward for a while was just so, it was very full of wonder, and I was fascinated to sort of rediscover myself and the things that I could get into now that I wasn't sort of like a misanthropic hermit that never, you know, left the house because of like codependence and all this, you know. So that's interesting. I like that passage.
So. Fuck yeah, dude. And I think that, like, I don't know, I've had a similar experience like that too, actually like a few, but like this idea of like being in this really low, like, non-magical place, and like, mm-hmm. yeah, having, for me, it was something like, you know, pretty catastrophic and shit that took,
yeah.
it took a lot to sort of like break me out of that pattern. Yeah, and
your podcast talking.
Yeah. About. So I feel what you're saying super hard. It makes total sense. And, yeah. You know, I think that there's a lot of like analogies that we can see, like, you know, in different stories, like about like, you know, this sort of like initiatory journey. And I think that yeah. that's kind of a classic step in there somewhere for a sure. lot of people, right? Like, so yes, I don't yeah. know. It's cool to be in good company.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. Yeah. And I mean, in, even though I didn't see, you know, a quote unquote miracle, like most people would describe them, I have seen some stuff. I've, you know, I've had some weird, inexplicable sort of paranormal things happen that were definitely wondrous to me.
Sure. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, one of them happened with Akate, and I've heard you.
I was literally just about to mention her. Get out of my head.
Yeah. My thaumaturge training is coming. No, I'm just kidding.
your powers as an occultist are growing as we speak. Yeah, I was going to mention that, like, yeah, the sort of like work that I do with her could certainly be categorized as thaumaturgical in nature.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff for sure. I enjoy it. Yeah. Just the sort of like idea of like, I don't know. I'm really interested in like thinking about, and I think that this is probably pretty common for a lot of different people, but just sort of this idea of like, you know, on a lot of different levels, like how do like power dynamics play out and stuff. And like, when you think about like this idea of like our, even if you think about it like purely from the psychological perspective of like what are gods and like what does that mean, and like, I don't know, it's just really interesting to like explore that territory.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I have some weird ideas, I think, about gods, and that thing that happened with Akate, it definitely felt like a message. And like you said, even if we're using the psych model, it was if it was from me, it was from a pretty deep buried place that I, you know, wasn't aware of when I got the message, and it was uncanny how it unfolded. So, and it's interesting too, because just sort of like moving along through, if we're looking at us talking right now as sort of part of the interpretive process of the bibliomancy, some of my friends have talked about Hecate as being sort of a, and this was for them, it doesn't necessarily have to apply to everyone, but I know a few people that it's not the deity they work with, but it's the deity that they started with, and then she just sort of introduced them to, or helped get them to, deities that made more sense for them.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah, like that gatekeeper,
sure,
vibe. Yeah. Not in a bad like gatekeeping, you know, way.
Yeah, she's a crossroad deity. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So maybe I should work more closely, or, you know, at least give that a shot.
In my experience, like, if you ask her to like help you find something or find something out, or like find your way to something, or like a place in your mind, like, she'll like just pretty solidly come through. At least this has been my experience, and that's dope. Like,
yeah.
But also my experience has been like a feeling of like really showing like a lot of respect and stuff. And like, I don't know if that, I don't know. Like, it's interesting. Like, when I talk to other people who do like deity work, like, I've heard a lot of people say like, oh, I don't like bend a knee to the gods. That's not my vibe. Like, we like hang out together and stuff. And I totally get that and stuff. And like, that makes sense. You know, I sort of treat a lot of the deity work I do as almost like, especially at first, is like dating, like hanging out, like getting to know the thing and stuff. But like, I think that there is something to this sort of like idea of coming at it from like an attitude of submissiveness.
Yeah,
that can be a powerful thing to experiment with. If, you know, it's not for everybody though, right? Like, nothing is. Or sorry, I should say, like, not everything is for everybody.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, yeah. That makes me want to talk about, I mean, I don't want to take up more of your time than sort of what you have slated.
Oh, I'm down to talk more about this for sure. I love this stuff.
So it's interesting that you said that you treat sort of the initial hangouts like with, or working with deities as like dating, where at first you're going to, you know, get to know them. So what happened with Hecate is that, sort of like the preface is, there was a time when I was going to go on a hike, and before I got out of my car, I just asked Akate, or said like, I'm open to hearing you. I'm open to anything that you want to show me. And this was like baby step, like in back into sort of the occult. And while we were hiking, my wife and I, there was a certain point where we were like coming up to like where the path sort of went in three directions, and then we heard like a hooting, and I know that like she's not sometimes she I think that she's associated with dogs. I'm not sure if she's associated with owls, so maybe that's not a quote-unquote hit. When I heard that, it made me sort of like pay attention, like, okay, like, is this, am I receiving some kind of communication? Is this a sign? And up against the tree that we were, that was like right in the sort of like to the side of where the paths went in three different directions, there was like a perfect walking stick, like just perfect. And it could be like a staff too. And so like I took that home thinking like I've been gifted with this. This is a gift. I can use this as a staff, like in ritual. But unfortunately, fast forward, I sort of neglected that gift. Like I sort of just left it up against the wall at the back door and then never like sanded it, never, you know, oiled it or did anything with it. And when I left that apartment, I decided I'm just going to sort of leave this sort of as firewood, because I feel like it should just sort of be like recycled into the earth if I'm not gonna, you know, do anything with it. And when this really weird thing happened with Hecate, it was me recounting this to a group that I meet with here in my city, and I was asking them like, what do you guys think? Like, do you think that I thwarted, you know, this gift, and that it would be a bad idea to try to get back in touch with this deity? Like, is she just going to tell me to fuck off, you know? And they were talking about how, like, you know, there were like a few ideas thrown out, and all of them were pretty adamant that I shouldn't think of it that way. And one of them was saying, like, you know, maybe time doesn't really work the same way. I know I'm going into like deity, talking about deities as if they're just definitely real, and so this may not be interesting to some people, but that's how everyone at the sort of at the table that I was talking to these people, everyone sort of has that mindset. And then another person said, well, just think about it like this, like if that happened to you, you know, if a friend hadn't talked to you in a really long time, if they then like texted you and it wasn't like any big deal, like maybe you gave them like a stuffed animal or something, but they just didn't get into it, you know, like it's not like they ripped it apart and in front of you and told you that they hated it. They just, you know, they kept it for a while and then it didn't really seem like a thing that they wanted to keep, so they gave it away to charity or something. Like, what would you tell that person to fuck off if they then contacted you a couple years later? And I was like, no, of course not. And right at that instant, someone texted me that hadn't talked to me for like 2 years.
Oh shit.
And it was like the last thing that we had talked about is like getting together at some point to hang out. And this was like 2 years later, and they were doing the very sort of apologetic thing of like, I'm so sorry. I know I was supposed to like get back to you like in a few days and blah, 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 blah. So it was just sort of uncanny. Like, here is the situation. Like, let's role play a little bit. Like, here, you be me. and so how do you think? How do you think I feel about it? Or, you know, and so I did reestablish in the sense that I started doing like her Orphic hymn and whatnot, because it seemed like an obvious answer. Yeah. The reason I was reminded by when you said dating is because then I ended up dating that person for a while. So, yeah.
Okay. That's cool. I love, that's a fucking great story. I love that. And like, yeah. I've had sort of these same types of synchronicities come up when I was doing this extended sort of what I consider to sort of like, I don't know, maybe like initiate myself into like the, you know, the paradigm I'm working in now with like all this like theurgy shit or whatever you want to call it, yeah. Deity work, whatever. I did this sort of like extended, you know, kind of like ritual. I wanted it to be a sort of like ordeal or whatever. So I did like, you know, like 40 days and 40 nights of like just intense, like, you know, meditating for most of the day, like eating really plain stuff, like just spending like most of my time in contemplation and like, you know, doing these like sex magic rituals and stuff like that. And just, you know, sort of like trying to find my way like into the practice that I ended up establishing for this stuff. And while I was doing this, like there was all of this stuff from the past that was like coming up. There was a lot of psychological work that went along with it, which was like sort of like necessary step. And like all these things from the past were coming up in my like meditations and in my journaling and stuff like that. And then what started happening is that people from this like time and that I was thinking about and writing about started to contact me. And like,
yeah,
it was like, it wasn't just one either. It was like three different people that it happened like during this 40-day period. So like, it was really interesting. Like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, it's weird that things tie together in like abstract and unseen ways, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and you know, like I don't want to talk about it like ad nauseum, but obviously you could interpret my story in ways other than it being like you know, an actual deity, and I'm fine with that.
It was just
sort of uncanny regardless of how, like what model you bring to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so this is something that I keep reminding myself of, like, it's pretty hard, even from a semantical standpoint, to like really get down with like, oh, what's real or true, like whatever. Like
yeah.
Those don't seem like meaningful or even really that interesting of questions to ask, right? Like the more important thing is like, does it have causal potency? Like, what does it do? Mm-hmm. You know, it obviously like that stuff does. So it doesn't really like matter per se, like just from an operational standpoint, like what's going on behind the scenes, like if the deities are quote real or not, or like what does that even mean?
Sure.
What matters is that what happens, right? And our experiences. Yeah. And I think that especially as occultists, we can give ourselves a little bit more leeway and credit of just saying like, well, you know what, I don't know what actually quote happened, but I know what I experienced, right?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I do. I mean, I enjoy sort of the contemplation of it, but it's not obviously something that everybody has to be into, and I can understand from a standpoint of like, if it keeps you from doing the thing, then obviously let's ditch the worry about whether the thing is real or what the mechanics are or whatever, and just do the thing. And also from the standpoint of like, if people are gatekeeping, then that's shitty too. Like you don't want to have people telling you, well, actually, you know, you can't be a part of this tradition. So, you know, and then that sort of keep people from doing things either. But if you, on the other hand, if you're into it, like I studied philosophy out of high school because I love to sort of get into the weeds metaphysically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, if you find it enjoyable, maybe.
I totally agree. I think that like I sort of had to come to this. Maybe I don't want to say conclusion because that makes it sound too concrete. But like this is a sort of escape route that I found for the like recursive ponderings and ruminations I was doing on the topic. So, I absolutely totally hear what you're saying about like liking to get into the weeds. I feel that for sure. But like there has to be a way out of the weeds.
Oh yeah, too. Definitely. There has to be. Yes,
which
I agree.
I think I've located with the whole causal potency thing.
Yeah, totally. It can be unhealthy.
Yes. I like to read about like, you know, people's lives who like work, whose work I respect and stuff. And like a lot of these folks ended up like going insane.
It's like, yeah, maybe.
All right, well, there's a fucking warning in there, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up? It's me again, Luxa from the future. Thank you for listening. I hope you're enjoying the episode. So Stevie and I are about to get into a discussion about their foot fetish zine and the way that that interest plays out for them. And I wanted to explain some terminology that comes up real quick so we don't lose anybody. Okay, so in a BDSM power exchange situation, there is one person who is giving over authority to another person. In order to indicate this, a capital letter followed by a slash and then a smaller case letter will be used. An example that you might have seen is a capital D slash lowercase s, which indicates dominant and submissive. So if you're curious about learning more, there are all kinds of great resources out there about BDSM and kink and all that with which you can educate yourself. The Smuts Up podcast is not one of these great resources, but we do have a great time joking around and talking about our various perversions. It's a project that some of my friends and I began in an effort to cultivate more sex positivity in our circles, as well as to just stay connected and have fun and shit. You can hear Flood from the XV Planis podcast hanging out with us on Smuts Up, talking about blood and beatings in part two of our interview series, Deep Penetration. It's a lot like fresh air, if you've heard that. I like asking, why am I into this? I'm really interested in thinking about the psychological underpinnings of sexuality and kink. It's really fascinating stuff and full of feedback loops. And speaking of feedback loops, I'm stoked to be working on a new music project, which I'm sure I've probably mentioned a million times. Like the last one, the process involves recording rituals and building audio tracks from these recordings and a bunch of samples and stuff. Then more layers are added on as more rituals are recorded, like while listening to these tracks. So I've really pushed the barriers for myself on this one, which in large part is sort of a continuation of what I started with the Gratis Animus project. You can check that out in the show notes if you want to. I gained this ground with that project, and this one I'm working on now is sort of exploring that ground and, you know, continuing to push that further. There are some new elements, including an experiment that I'm really excited about, having some interesting results with it so far, involving the creation of a haunted sex toy. And I think I'm going to talk more about this in a future episode sometime. The bumper music that you've been hearing today is actually from an early iteration of the track that I built for this experiment. And I think I'm going to play a little bit more from the album at the end of the episode, too. So you might have heard me talk about this before. My deity work has been a big part of this project, as well as the last one. The rituals I record are typically devotional or divinatorial in nature, and Hecate as a crossroads deity, a psychopomp, a light bearer, the mother of fucking witches, and so many other dope things has been a very valuable companion indeed. So this episode's going to be published on the new moon and is in part a sort of dipnon for her, a feast given in her honor. I will metaphorically place it on the threshold by publishing it during my ritual tonight. It is also the Chinese New Year, which is super awesome. Happy New Year! Shout out to Alex, who did some scrying for me the other day regarding this episode. Good stuff, dude. Thank you. This is some automatic writing that I produced out of the images he found. The gate opens with an eagle on the wing, crest of hills marching away like receding waves. The faces of our lives turning, spinning wheels, the swirling waters of our many births. In stalking grasses, the tiger dances with the quiet stillness, waiting for the tear in time to catch with a claw, to step past the curtain into the new year. What will be unfurled in these banners we carry? What is written and what will we write? These flames we keep lit with the candles of our lives, what stories will they illuminate? And what animals will walk through the stars and the new frontiers we carve within ourselves? And that's as far as I got in 5 minutes. So that's the end. There's no answers to those questions. But if you have any answers, you can email them to me at luxoccultpod@gmail.com or on Instagram at luxoccultpod. All right, word. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back after the interview to read the hymn to Hecate that I wrote for this new moon, as well as to share some bibliomantic advice regarding theurgy. But now, let's get back into it. Here is the rest of my chat with Stevie. Well, I mentioned, like, at the very beginning of our conversation that there was a few different reasons why I wanted to talk to you. And, like, sure. The spoons thing was definitely one of them. And I was reminded again that I wanted to talk to you for the show when you showed up at one of the Green Mushroom chats, and you were just so, like, open and, like, chill about, you know, some of the stuff that we were talking about. And I really appreciated that, because it's something that I'm really moving towards, you know, in my work, hoping to move towards non-confrontational, perhaps. I'm not exactly sure how to say it, but just, like, an honesty that is really, like, I think it was, like, refreshingly authentic, perhaps, would be a way to say it.
Sure.
And one of the things that came up during that conversation was, you know, like a thing about like loving feet. And you mentioned that there is a foot zine coming out soon. And I would love to talk a little bit about that if you would be willing to.
Sure. Yeah, I can talk about that. As far as like the zine itself, it'll be working with a local photographer for sort of the pictures in it, which would just be of feet. I don't know how to describe it. Like if anyone wanted a taste of like what that, or they're just curious, like what does that look like? What sort of is sexy to like a foot fetishist? Just get on Instagram, put in some, you know, hashtags, and like there's just a whole, obviously there is, right? Because there is for everything. There's just a whole like subculture of people doing their foot modeling, and then an extension of that with their OnlyFans and everything. I mean, there's just but anyway, it'll be sort of stuff like that. No like faces, it'll just be like anonymity. And then the zine itself, like the meat of it, the writing is based on a post that I did on FetLife, where A, it just felt good to sort of get it out to express this, and B, like I felt like even within foot fetishism that I didn't quite gel with everyone. This is going to get really insider baseball.
I'm so curious. Continue.
So for a lot of people, it's about some kind of authority transfer or power dynamic. Mm-hmm. It's either it's like, okay, you're very gross, so the dynamic is going to be you're sort of humiliated, like I'm going to humiliate you, and you the foot fetishist, and then that's sort of going to be part of it. Or there's going to be like a master slave type dynamic, or it doesn't even have to be that extreme, just some kind of like big letter little letter dynamic. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? Does that language make sense?
Yeah sure. And I can put something in to qualify later.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so for a lot of people, being into feet is about being on that right side of the slash, the forward slash, as like a little letter, like either mm-hmm. a sub or a slave, or just someone that's being humiliated or put to service. But my foot fetish exists outside of all of that. It's like it's simultaneously very simple and also kind of complicated, because it's like I just want feet. Like I don't know how, and the writing goes into this. It's like it's almost ineffable. It's as I think a lot of things that people think of as normal desire would be if they actually sat down and started thinking about it. Like, why do I like this thing? I think it becomes kind of elusive if you sort of sit with it. Like, I don't know why I like this thing. It's sort of like instinctual or just feels innate. And that's how my foot fetish feels. Like I just sort of want to interact with them in every, like with all of my senses. And I just sort of go through like the history, like of me discovering this about myself, and then just talking about like all the things that I want to do with them. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sorry. It's my cat is like freaking out good. Running around. So it's like, that's why.
You're fine. That's okay. That's all right.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for like explaining. And I think that one of the things I've noticed too is that, so I know from doing like research for the other podcast that I do, one of the other ones, Smuts Up, that this is actually like from a statistical standpoint, like very, very common. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that I hear a lot of people openly talking about, openly, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, just expressing their love of. And it's really, I don't know, like, it's, I guess, like, we talked about this a little bit before, like, the idea of, like, a partialism versus a fetishism, or, like, you know, and, like, if we really want to get nitty gritty with
kind
it,
of,
it's
is
a
kind
partialism,
of
right? Like,
yeah, it's a partialism.
So, yeah. And it's, like, is it really that much more strange than being into, like, some other body parts that people like, like arms or boobs or butt cheeks or whatever. I mean, I don't know.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I don't think it is, because there are only a couple of parts that, you know, actually makes sense as far as like from a evolutionary biology standpoint, right? So besides those couple of places, like anything is a little bit strange at least, right? Because why?
Yeah.
And like I said, it's kind of people don't think about it until like if you're pressed, it's sort of like, well, I guess I don't really know. You
Sure.
know, it just is exciting. So there's something exciting about that part. And yeah, like when I say like I wanted to get this on paper because, or I wanted to get it out, I wanted to express myself because I felt often misrepresented. And it's like I'll get into some of the authority transfer stuff, and that's all fun, but it's like for its own reason. But my foot fetish just sort of exists outside of that. So I would get sort of frustrated with the response of like, oh, so like you, it's like really dirty, like you like lick dirt off of feet. I'm like, no, I don't
No.
though. I don't, and I don't, and I actually would prefer if you please clean them. Like, I don't, I, you know, it's like if someone was into boobs, lots of people are, and then I said, oh, so you want to like lick like dirt off of boot, you know, like, well, no, like,
That's a
right.
different thing.
It's a different thing, right? And that's okay for that to be a thing, but it's, yeah, there was never like a characterization that sort of, I would just get sort of irritated a little bit. It's just like a pet peeve, and that was why
Sure.
I started writing that.
Okay, no, that makes sense. So this is like foot fetishism that's not about power play. It's just the pure love of feet.
Yes. Yes,
Okay.
and I
Oh
mean
yeah.
there's like a line in the writing that's like what I this is like a little this is getting like into it, I guess, but what I'd prefer is like a cadaver-like surrender to my whims, my fetishism, which is just a touch. And like and I say that because that's often another question. Like this is not the mischaracterizations that I would get, but like potential partners would say, well, what are you going to do? And it's like you don't have to do anything. I just want to touch your feet. Like that's it. Like and I mean, and probably like while we're having sex. But it doesn't actually have to be like you don't have to sort of to go back to the dynamic. Like you don't have to be anybody that you're not. You don't have to, you know, sort of take on like a big letter persona in order for me to have a good time with my foot fetish. Literally, there's, you know, we can just lay on a couch and I, if you let me touch your feet, I'm good. I'm solid.
Fuck yeah. No, that's dope. Have you ever thought about I don't know, would this be really weird, but have you ever thought about I don't know, going into a foot related job, or would that be crossing a line?
I don't, so, and that's something else that I tell people because like they're like one thing that I've gotten before is like so like foot rubs, like you want to give foot rubs, and it's like yes, I will give you a foot rub. Like if I could left to my own devices, I'd give you a foot rub until like my fingers locked up and I couldn't, you know. But you have to keep in mind that like I can't not sexualize it. I can't not do it. Like
Sure.
I
Okay.
can be cool about it. It doesn't turn me into just like with anything, like
Being into something doesn't turn you into a fucking drooling
right.
lunatic
Right,
necessarily.
exactly. Right. But it's in my, like the sexualization of it is in my head, right? I can't make it just like go away completely. So you have to be cool with the fact that I'm going to be sexualizing you at least somewhere in my head.
Yeah, that makes total sense, especially coming back to what we were talking about earlier with consent and stuff. And I could, yeah, that makes total
So
sense.
I know I should definitely not be like a podiatrist or anything. No.
Sure,
That would
sure.
be inappropriate and uncomfortable. That's not to say that anyone that has a foot fetish shouldn't be. Maybe they have, maybe theirs is connected to, you know, like an authority transfer. And so it just doesn't get, I guess, activated, quote unquote. I mean, there are a lot of different scenarios and there's lots of nuance and people have different psyches and.
Absolutely. Yes. Everybody has to do their own thing their own way,
Right.
in a way that's consensual for everybody, I should say. But yes, Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought about like looking into like reflexology because it's interesting to me. I don't know so far as like the veracity of the claims made by reflexology, which is, I think, I don't know if you're familiar, like different parts of the feet correspond to different parts of the body.
Yeah, I've seen charts and stuff. I haven't really experimented a lot with it though.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and but it would just be, or just like giving like killer massages just because so that's pleasurable for the person receiving the foot rub. But that's, yeah, that, not to become like a professional or make ever make any money. Like I don't want to take money to rub people's feet.
Okay.
And I don't, and I'm not going to. And unfortunately, that also means that there's never going to be, like I talked about, a friendly foot rub between me and a person. So, yeah.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know. Some people can give each other breast exams and it's not sexual.
Yeah.
That's not always the case, right?
Right. Right. And I mean, if like, if someone was, I don't know, like, if there was a scenario where someone had broken a bone or something, I mean, I can, I'm not, again, like I'm not a raging, you know, I can deal with it, right? I can sort of like, okay, this person is injured. There's a practical thing that needs to happen. If I am the only person around, like, then yes, I'm gonna help the person. But yeah.
Yeah, no, totally.
But
All right, well, fuck yeah. So,
yeah.
this I could talk about this shit forever. So, this
Yeah,
scene,
same.
like when it comes out, will you send me a link so I can put it in the show notes for folks to check it out if they want
Yeah,
to?
sure. Yeah,
Okay, hell
sure.
yeah.
It's probably not gonna be, it'll probably be a bit, but yeah. But yeah,
Okay.
I can do that for sure.
Fuck yeah.
I will, I can talk about this for a very long time. So yeah, if you're,
Would you be willing to come talk about foot fetishism or foot partiality or whatever you want to call it more on the Smuts Up podcast sometime?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, hell yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah. If you want sort of a foot pervert,
Fantastic. Yeah, we would love to hear more of your in-depth thoughts on
yep.
it.
Yeah,
Fantastic.
sure, that sounds like fun. Have you, I have, I'm not totally caught up. Have you ever had, like, I guess the earlier episodes that I've listened to, there aren't like guests. Is that something that you've started to do?
Yes, we have started to do that because our production schedule is very slow and the process of recording the show is akin to herding cats. We haven't recorded in a while, but we are
Sure.
getting back in the saddle soon and we have a lot of really interesting people that we're going to be talking to. We're super stoked about it and it sounds like you're going to be one of them, so fuck yeah.
Yeah, I would be happy to come on and talk about my perversion for sure.
Okay, fantastic. All right, dude. Well, Stevie, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate you. I know we didn't think we would talk quite this long, and I'm
Yeah.
really glad that you were willing to take the extra time and yeah, get into it here with me. Is there anything that you want to talk about that I didn't ask you about?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, no, I'm pretty happy with what we talked about. Yeah.
Okay, hell yeah. And is there anything that you wanted to ask me?
Let's see. I didn't, when we talked about how much time we were going to spend, I hadn't really sort of
Oh, yeah, no worries.
thought about
Yeah,
that. So, yeah,
totally
sorry.
fine.
I
I always ask this at the end because it's
Yeah.
kind of a trick because people are like, oh, thank God, the interview's over. I'm like, wait, oh, you don't want to ask me anything? That's okay. I don't have to talk then.
Yeah.
It's strange. Like,
Yeah.
you know, I do have a podcast, but I still feel nervous about talking on it. So there you have
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, same. There are definitely points where I know that I rambled, and it was because I get so anxious that like I have to sort of work myself back to the point that I had because I've like lost it. So,
You're
yeah,
totally speaking my language.
that, yeah.
Right, well, fuck yeah. I really appreciate it. And anybody that's listening, you know, if you need some extra spoons, Stevie has placed them out there for you. So
Yeah.
go ahead and grab one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Fuck yeah.
Instructor right there.
All right, fuck yeah. Thank you again so much to Stevie. It was an absolute pleasure talking with them. I really like the idea of thaumaturgy or wonderworking or whatever, this concept of doing big magic. We were just talking about this the other day during one of our Green Mushroom Fungal Friday chats. Maybe we don't ask enough for magic sometimes. I don't know. So shout out to everybody participating in the Green Mushroom Hypho Sigil Project, which is a large-scale group working that you can be a part of. If you're curious to learn more, check out the last episode of the show, which me and some fellow Green Mushroom Council members made for just such a purpose, getting new people on board and everything. There will also be some links about it in the show notes, so check that out. Okay, I am going to play a sample from my new music project here in just a bit. But first, some programming notes and stuff. I have a bunch of awesome guests lined up, including a few interviews that are already recorded. I had a fantastic conversation with Joel of Dream Mirror, who you can hear in episode 15 of this show, as well as a really awesome chat with Eric J. Millar, the very prolific artist and creator of various cool oracular devices. Shout out to him. As well as to Keats Ross, Derek Hunter, and the rest of the We the Hallowed crew. Haunt on. Super stoked to be talking with Eduardo Afcano about his research and book about Lucifer soon, as well as welcoming back the very badass Aiden Wachter to talk about magical identity and his book Changeling, a book of qualities. So super stoked for both those conversations. Don't miss all the great stuff coming down the line here as well on the Green Mushroom Podcast Network sibling shows. We have Administrism, Ad Hoc History, Faith Blind Council, Unearthing Paranormalcy, and Smuts Up. We are very excited to be expanding the network soon. More on that to come. Okay, so in honor of the Dark Moon, as I've said, I'd like to read the hymn to Hecate that I wrote. But first, I'd like to thank you so much for listening. It means a lot to me to make this show, and it would not be possible without you people listening. It's a huge honor and a privilege to know that for some people, however small, it might have had a positive impact. So fuck yeah, shout out to Fantastic Monastic on Instagram. It's been really rad seeing your journey and your work with the Green Mushroom Project. If people are into what I'm doing here, they can tell a friend, post about it on social media, write a positive review, or click some stars. If you would like to support the show on Patreon, you can do so, as well as taking a bibliomancy break with me. There are no tiers, so give as you will. You can also thank me by putting some of the stuff we talk about on this show into practice in a way that would be beneficial to yourself and the people around you. And if you feel like telling me about it, you can do so at LuxOccultPod on Instagram, or you can email me at LuxOccultPod@gmail.com. So touching on the subject of deity work and the hymn that I wanted to read you, this is the result of some more automatic writing. So for this one, I worked myself into a sort of excitatory state by meditating and doing breath work, and then I wrote for 5 minutes. And as I wrote, I thought of this. I feel very grateful for that which I have been given, that which I am being given, and that which I am yet to receive. Dear Des. Hail to you, Hecate, Lady of the Branching Ways, the crossroads of all realms. Mother of magic, mistress of the moonless night, the deep currents of time and tides. Honor to you, wise queen of the paths, lighter of the darkened ways. Hear one who would open the gates of my perception. Place your keys in my hands. O Lady Divine, allow me access to the mystery of this unfolding. Grant me the sureness of foot as I dance these hallowed grounds. Give me the courage as I covet the dream of the secret heart. All right, and that is as far as I got in 5 minutes again. I did want to share one more thing, though, on this topic. This is some more information that I have gotten through using bibliomancy with the book that I talked about earlier, Hecate Soteria. I'm probably not saying that right. Regardless, this is what I came away with. I had asked about direction going into a particular ritual, And this was the advice that I was given. For it is essential that you do not regard these dogs before you. Initiate your body. For being earthly, difficult dogs, they are shameless. And charming souls, they constantly drag them away from the rites. Okay, so yes, don't let the dogs distract you. That seems like excellent advice. Okay, well, on that note, I suppose I will leave you with a bit of a track from my new Sound Magic project, album, whatever you want to call it. Still working on nailing that definition down. It's been pretty intense work making it, and I think I've learned a lot and grown a lot in the process, which is cool. But there's something else about it that I would like to say, and I haven't really brought this up much or been super like upfront about it, even though it's probably pretty obvious. But I think that by not saying it loud and like saying it proud, I might be doing myself and other people a disservice. As a friend of mine the other day reminded me, shout out to you, Joy, all of our sexuality, and you know, particularly people who are like feminine, like it's constantly under attack from forces or whatever that would use it to control us in some way or another. So any bit of it that we can take back and reclaim for ourselves is really an act of liberation we're celebrating. So yes, I make these not safe for work music tracks for purposes of magic and self-development, but, and I can't really stress this enough, like I also make them because I'm into it, I like it. And you know what? I certainly won't fucking apologize for that. I think sometimes I feel like maybe I should, but that's nonsense. That's something that I'm going to choose to resist. Resist by maintaining sovereignty of the self. Resist by maintaining love of the self. Resist by maintaining fierce loyalty to love and pleasure. Resist with acts of radical kindness. Focus on the path to better times. All right, fuck yeah. I'm going to leave you with a track here called Lay Us Down from the new Sound Magic project, whatever you want to call it. I should mention this is not safe for work, so if you think that might be uncomfortable or a problem, please don't listen to it. Otherwise, I hope you enjoy it. Much love, stay strong, and stay fucking curious.
Cult is part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network. To hear more great independent productions like the one you just listened to, visit our catalog at keygmpodcastnetwork.com.
So what's up? It's the sex-positive comedy show your parents forgot to warn you about.
I will be your delightful host, Deep Weird, and with me are my three very sexy friends.
I'm Captain Spanx, drop an anchor, it's a spanker!
Hi, I'm Raven Gunnigan, and I'm about to eat 16 feet of nerds, bro.
And I'm Luxa, and that is all you get to know about me. Join us for a ride full of twists and turns as we explore the rabbit hole that is human sexuality.
I, Smuts Up Crew, would like to propose...
Oh my god, he's proposing.
A question.
Get down on your fucking knees. If you're curious about expanding your horizons or getting more comfortable in your own skin, then the Smuts Up podcast is for you. Or maybe you're just a horny nerd or a person who enjoys outdated references. The Smuts Up podcast is fun for the whole step family.
I'm going to say the B word. Butthole sunning.
If you were to put a hot dog in it, is it a sandwich?
I don't know. Is a bread dildo with a hot dog inside it a sandwich? Write to us at smutsup69@gmail.com and let us know what you think about that. Available on your favorite podcast apps.
I put a D20 in my mouth.
Nailed it.
What scares you?
Ghosts.
Aliens.
Monsters.
The occult. Conspiracies.
Some of you like to be scared, and unearthing paranormalcy is for you.
Some of you try everything you can to avoid it. Unearthing paranormalcy is for you.
We take the topics that scare some, and we dig in to find the source, then present the history to make the paranormal a little more normal.
We also throw in a bit of comedy to shed a light on some of the darkness in the world.
So whether you're scared of bumps in the night, what's inside your own mind, or strange lights in the sky, we cover it all.
We dig in and present all that we find and try to come up with some logical
and not so logical
reasons for the high strangeness happenings.
Sometimes we are scared of the things we don't understand, and the more we understand, the less we fear.
So find us, Unearthing Paranormalcy, on your favorite podcast app, and join us on Facebook, Instagram, and Discord at UMP Normalcy. And until next time,
keep digging.
Are you heartbroken? Having trouble letting go of that special someone? Here at Illumin Industries, we understand the complex web of strife and heartache that is mortal existence. That's why we created Forever Friend, a revolutionary advancement in companionship science. Thanks to new changes in the law, it is now possible to transfer someone's digital imprint to one of our specially designed furry friends. Imagine cuddling up at night with a cat or dog that combines the fluffy softness of a Persian and the personality point markers of your ex-fiancé, or the loyalty of a golden retriever with the skill for trivia of your dead husband. Forever Friends are carefully engineered to be hypoallergenic, hyper-enhanced, and gluten-free, allowing for hours of authentic feeling conversation. Conversation mode can be switched off through the Forever Friend app for those times when you'd prefer to be alone with your thoughts. Choose from over 20 breeds of dogs and cats with a variety of color options, with bird options coming soon. The possibilities are endless. Forever Friends, softer than the real thing. Illumin, making it work for you. See Cyber Catalog for details and information about the Forever Friend privacy policy. Illumin Industries and its affiliates reserve the right to change these policies at any time without notice. All conversations with Forever Friends may be recorded for quality control and optimization purposes. Quality of Forever Friends personality emulation is dependent on data richness of digital imprint, not responsible for actions of Forever Friends.